welcome to the Music to My Ears podcast, brought to you by BBC Music Magazine, the world's best-selling classical music magazine. This week, reviews editor Michael Beek sits down with the Russian-British conductor Vasily Petrenko. Vasily recently said farewell as chief conductor of the Oslo Philharmonic and is about to embark on a final season as chief conductor of the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra. Speaking to us from his father's home in St. Petersburg, Vasily talks about returning to the conductor's podium after months of lockdown, saying goodbye to the RLPO and his new appointment with the Royal Philharmonic in 2021.
So, Vasily, thanks so much for sitting down with me this afternoon. It's great to see you. I believe you're in Russia at the moment.
Pleasure to be with you, Michael. And yes, I'm in St. Petersburg, or near St. Petersburg, and spending this time here because I'm supposed to be in Liverpool conducting this week. But due to the quarantine regulations, I couldn't do it because in UK, this is 14 days since you arrived from the countries which are not on the travel corridor. So as Russia, as many other countries are not on the travel corridor, I couldn't come to Liverpool, which I feel very sorry for the public, especially in those really tough days with quarantine restrictions. But I hope to be back in Liverpool in November. Those days are challenging with travel.
Yeah, absolutely. And with regards to that, obviously pre-pandemic, you obviously have been so busy up until recently, sort of chief conductor of at least three orchestras. How, for the listeners, how does that work for you when you're juggling three roles like that?
Well, to be a chief conductor nowadays, it means that you spend roughly between 10 and 15 weeks with the orchestra per year. So, of course, if you multiply it by three, brings you to the peak amount of weeks. However, to me, it always was a pleasure. You know, working as a chief conductor allows you to go more in depth with the orchestra, in depth because you know the musicians, you know their potential, and you also can work in transition and you can do this weeks in concession so that on one week you're working on something and then it continuing to the other weeks. It's always been a pleasure, both in Liverpool and Oslo and with the European Union Orchestra. And so, you know, I hope that the time of pre-pandemic in some extent will come back.
And during the pandemic, you did some online interviews called Lockdown Talks. Tell us a little bit about those, why you wanted to do them and sort of what the outcome was from doing it.
Well, I was trying, this is the first time in many years when I had more than enough of the free time, and I was trying to basically test what the other professions, what's like your profession is. And to me, it was very interesting to talk to the people from various industries, not necessarily music, there were airline industries, hospitality industries, even financial industries, and to see how they affected by the current situation, to see the different parts of the world, what is the government support, what are the ways how the people are dealing with such a difficult situation, and also to see what is the reaction for the art in the different parts of the world. I'm planning now, actually started already, but it will be released soon, a next set of interviews, which hopefully will be called Open Up rather than Lockdown. Because I guess instead of all the figures and raising cases of COVID in many countries, the society is ready to acknowledge the opening up and acknowledge the necessity of the culture, the necessity of social life. That's why countries take different measures, and that's why some of them, even in the face of quite serious danger of being overcrowded in hospitals, they still keep a lot of social activities up, even in England, even in UK. If you compare the lockdown, which is now in parts of UK, with the lockdown which have happened in April, there's less restriction now than in April. Many things for social life open and possible. And I think that this social health, the mental health, it is also very, very important for the people, not just physical health.
And you yourself, you've gone back on the podium last month in Germany. I think you're doing another German concert this month. And of course, you're in Russia at the moment. Nice to be back, I'm sure, in front of an orchestra.
Well, I started the first concert, actually went even back in July. It was also in Dresden, where I'm heading next week. And since then, obviously, it's very few concerts. The schedule is full, or was full at least until now, until the January. So I planned to come next week, for instance, to Genève, which I also can't do. And again, because of the UK quarantine, because then I need to return to UK in November. Actually, I honestly believe that UK government can give a little bit more of exemptions, caring about their citizens, about their chief conductors. I think that the artists who are working in UK, especially like I was working for over 15 years now, they should be granted possibility to avoid a quarantine by doing the COVID tests. But started back in July, I've seen different measures, different regimes in different countries. Now, as you say, I'm in Russia, did the concerts in Moscow last week. Next week, going to Dresden, where concerts there, then back to Liverpool.
And of course, at a time like this, people are just sort of crying out for musical experiences and concerts, and probably now drawing on memories of the concerts they've been to and holding them quite dear. You must have been to some great concerts over the years, perhaps while you were studying. Do any sort of spring to mind as being sort of the most amazing that you were at as an audience member?
Well, I remember a few concerts which always probably will be stuck in my memory. One of the first concerts which I... how to put it, I can acknowledge as a classical music concert. It's probably not the first concert I ever been, but the first I remember. It was one of the last of Mravinsky concerts in St. Petersburg, in Leningrad by then, with Leningrad Philharmonic. And I've been barely 6 years old. And I do remember they played Schubert Unfinished Symphony, and then there was Bruckner in the second half. And I remember that, to me, Schubert was something, how to put it, at my 6 years old intellectual level, I probably couldn't understand this intellectual level of Mravinsky and of the orchestra and of the piece. So to me, it was a little bit of a scary experience in some way, because I couldn't understand it. I enjoyed it, but I couldn't understand it. And then Bruckner in the second half, to me, at 6 years old, at that time was Terra Incognita. So I appreciated the gravity and the grandeur of this symphony. I think it was number 4, if I'm right, but you know, to be honest, I can't remember for sure. And in the same time, I didn't understand it. So it was something really big, really grand, appreciated, but not understandable. I was still excited after the concert. Then I remember Leni Bernstein with one of the first visits to Soviet Union with New York Phil. And they played West Side Story, obviously, the suites, and they, in the first half, there were music of Gershwin, so American music. And to me, this concert is very memorable because we were taught that music is very serious business. And everybody, even still up till now, in Russian orchestras playing everything with very, very serious faces. And then you can see how it's possible to enjoy what you're doing, enjoy being on stage. And of course, Lenny... who was one of the most exuberant and most entertaining person on stage and I guess off stage. So with him and with New York Phil playing their music, American music, that was very, very special effect. Then I remember a concert of Abbado, Claudio Abbado, one of the first concerts after he recovered from the cancer disease. And they were with Gustav Mahler Jugendorchester at that time. And I remember, you can clearly sense and feel that he, Claudio, gained something by going through such a difficult territory, probably being one foot in the grave, but then coming back. And he had this special message, and to see, to witness it, it was Mahler 9, and to see this pose at the end, which took probably 1 or even 2 minutes, it was incredibly long and touching and moving experience. And then much later, for instance, also in the same hall in Leningrad and St. Petersburg, I've seen George Schulte, who was trying to convince St. Petersburg Philharmonic about his way of performing Brahms and Beethoven. This concert very memorable for me, because from there I learned that if you respectful but very firm, you can overrule and overcome resistance from the orchestra in the way of how they think about music versus how you feel about music. So he was a very firm person, and the result he got at the end was probably one of the best performances of Beethoven and Brahms by this orchestra they have done in years.
Wow. So these were quite formative experiences for you, particularly when you were much younger. Had you already sort of decided that you were going to be a conductor in some of those earlier moments, or did these concerts sort of help sort of germinate that idea for you?
I think they all helped, obviously. To say when I decided, it's very difficult to say that, you know, I woke up in one of the mornings and decided I'll be a conductor. Not for sure not. I studied in a very special school, which was educating the choir conductor. So from 7 years old, when you're passing the exams to school, it's a boys' school. And when you're starting to study, it's very selective, highly selective school. So to even to pass the exam, you have to be selected from 400 to 25. And then every year outsiders eliminated. So it's almost like Olympic system in some ways. But since 7 years old, you knew by then that if you will be able to finish the school, you will be qualified as a conductor for choir. You will be given a degree, and most likely you would have the guaranteed job, which may not be in central Russian cities. It may be somewhere in Siberia or somewhere else, but it will be very respected job. It will have a decent, by Soviet standard, decent salary. And then obviously you will have a very respected life. Then by study in this school, there was a time when the Soviet Empire was collapsing and the choir system collapsed with that. So by the end, we knew that it will be really difficult to find the job for us. As for probably everyone at that time, we're talking about late 80s, early 90s, that was really hard time. And then I've seen us orchestra conducting is more international. So for me, that was sort of natural choice. But also because I was very interested in variety of the instruments and variety of expressive ways. As the choir is great thing and I still love it, I hope that choirs will be permitted soon. But the voice is a singular instrument. It has a very big range of expressive moments and of abilities. However, for the orchestra, you have many other instruments, many different instruments with different ways of making sound, with different ways of thinking about it, breathing, scratching, snorkeling, hammering, anything. And to me, always was interesting to discover all those instruments and to combine them all into the orchestra.
And do you recall when you were a child in that school, an early piece of music that you sort of were that captured your attention, that you fell in love with, or that you enjoyed performing?
Well, you know, to say that I recall or remember the first piece of music which I was attached to, I can't say. Most likely, it was some of the Soviet song about Lenin in the choir, even before that school when I was 4 or 5 years old, which we sang all together. But in this school, as we all started together with singing, we started to learn piano. And one of the first things we were learning were Bach, Vuoi temperirte clavier. Of course, we starting from easy preludes and fugues and then going through. It's probably one of them. And as it starts from the first one in C major, that probably was one of the first preludes and fugues, one of the first pieces of music which I could acknowledge as something what I was, at least I was playing it for several months.
Now, of course, without this this pandemic situation, you're actually entering a period of some change yourself anyway, because you've come to an end with your chief conductorship with Oslo Phil, and you're embarking on sort of an ending, if you will, with the Liverpool Philharmonic, and about to then move on to the RPO. What is it? How do you feel when you're coming to the end of a long tenure with an orchestra? It must be quite tough.
I think it will be tough if you just say goodbye, but I'm not. I'm handing it over to, I think, really good conductors, first of all, both for Santi and for Domingo. They are really good conductors. They will gain experience, and I hope they'll get even better. Secondary, I'm planning to go back to the both orchestras on the annual basis. It is sad in the moment that I don't know if I will achieve with any other orchestra in the future the same sensitivity, the same very sensitive, very delicate connection in terms of music. I hope so, but obviously I don't know. And to me, this is also like, you know, that's a moment when you acknowledge that you're not getting younger. And that's a moment when you think that, gosh, the time is flying. And that's like 7 years in Oslo. They were almost like instant finger thoughts. And in Liverpool, 15 years also went really, really fast. But I hope that, again, this is not the end. This is the start of the new chapter, both for me and for the orchestras. And we will perform together in this year. I mean, maybe slightly reduced programs, but we will perform together, I really believe, in it, and for the upcoming years.
Absolutely. And in sort of joining with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra next year, what sort of things do you have to do to prepare when you're joining a new orchestra? Obviously got an established orchestra, a long history. Are there things that you already have in mind that you would like to achieve with them, or do you just begin work and see where it takes you?
Both, obviously. You have in mind the trajectory and where you're going to. I'm very glad that in case of Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, they have a very active and very modern management, and the management which shares my ambitions. Hopefully, by the autumn 2021, the situation with pandemic will calm down and we will be able to perform on the big stages as it was planned this year with Mahler Symphonies in London in the Royal Albert Hall. You see where it can go. However, to achieve that, you have to live with the people in the orchestra. You have to learn with them. You have to discover who are those people and what it is in depth. Obviously, we met all together, but the true understanding of where are we going and how it's possible to help them to unleash their best qualities, that can only come with a constant work. So to me, it's a little bit of both. Something what I imagine how it will be, and something what I have to learn how to achieve this imaginative dream.
For those listening who have no idea of the difference, what are the differences for you in a role as chief conductor versus music director?
To be honest, very little. I think it's just how the titles are called in different countries. Because, you know, obviously in Liverpool I was doing roughly the same job, and in Oslo I was doing the same job. I was organizing the seasons with programs, on my programs, and also advising on the programs for the guest conductors and guest soloists. I guess it will be the same in London, and I think it's roughly the same. In America, though, it was a bit different, as the music director also had obligations, a lot of side things, like dinners with sponsors, for instance, or visiting the very special events, etc., etc. But you're doing them anyway in UK or any other country. It's just in America, they are part of contract and they're paying for it. They used to exist. So I don't think there will be many changes on this or that title. And to be honest, you know, for me, for my pride or something, it doesn't matter at all. what title this or that. To me, what is important is ability to work with orchestra and ability to perform at its best and at a better level tomorrow than today.
Yeah. And in terms of your, obviously the coming season, but the seasons beyond that with the new orchestra, are you already, do you have in mind what it is you're going to be performing? Is that sort of set? Are you already reading scores and preparing?
Well, it is set, but I don't know if it all will be possible to perform, sadly. It's all set. We tend to plan at least 1.5 years ahead. So now I'm talking to some of the orchestras and promoters about 2023. But those days, who knows, maybe we'll be forced to come to the very short planning schemes. Who knows? The whole scene is changing to something different, changing to something, in my point of view, much more challenging for the orchestras, for any musician. What it will make, what it will be in the next years, at the moment, it's really difficult to say. Because I think once the pandemic is over, it will be over at some point, this way or another, then we all will face a very, very huge economic pressure. And obviously culture is one of the first things which will feel this economic pressure and which will need to deal with this economic pressure. How this economic pressure will affect all the cultural and arts organizations on the future will show.
And do you, when you're not working on music, reading scores or having to listen, do you turn to music for your own sort of pleasure? Is there music that you sort of find sort of comfort in if you need a moment?
I wouldn't say there's a music which I would find especially like one music. I like to listen to different genres and sorts of music. I'd say there's no bad genre of music or no bad direction of music. There's just bad and good music in every genre. And for that, yesterday, for instance, I'm now in the house of my dad in near St. Petersburg. And he had a little bit of jazz background in early age. So he was listening on the TV some jazz music yesterday, which I watched and listened with big pleasure. And there's many other types of music which I'd like to listen. However, when it's a heavy work, and I don't think that I'm alone in that, I think that a lot of classical musicians are the same. When it's a heavy work schedule, you're trying to have as many silent moments as you can because your brain's still playing some music. And then you work on rehearsals and on the concerts with orchestra. So you're surrounded by it. And then you're trying to get at least 1 hour of not having any music to your ears. Sounds of nature, they're great. The total silence, sounds of water, anything non-artificial.
Your job, you're obviously always focusing on the next score, the next project. What's in your head at the moment? What are you sort of focusing on? What are you having to keep thinking about?
Well, there's obviously this project in Dresden which I'm focusing on. There's the music of Haydn, but it's cantata, which is unusual story for me. There's also Mendelssohn. There's many other things, and then the projects in there. But you're right. You always work. In normal days, you work with orchestra on one program and then you study another one for the next week or for the week after next. Sometimes it's two, sometimes it's three. Last week for me was actually the first time, and I think first time for the orchestra, if not in all history, but for many years, we played in Moscow Die Große Fuge by Beethoven for the string orchestra. There's an arrangement by Felix Weingartner, one of the great conductors of the past. And it's one of the most challenging and demanding pieces for the string instruments. People were always saying that Beethoven was deaf and he couldn't hear what he was writing. I think he wasn't deaf. This piece probably was ahead of its time for at least 100 of, if not more, years. And the amount of dissonance, amount of innovation, amount of ideas in this piece is truly unprecedented. And every day it's something new to learn, something new to discover, something new to find.
You're a prolific recording artist. You know, you've had some great series with Naxos and Onyx and Lauer Classics with Oslo. What drives that side of your work? Is it pieces that you personally want to record, or is it sort of born of sort of concert performances and wanting to capture that moment with the orchestra?
No, I don't think they're born from the concert performances. It's first I'm planning certain repertoire to record, and then we build the concerts around this repertoire. Talking about recordings, I think only in case of Shostakovich cycle, the initiative of it was on the Naxos side. They came with this idea, but I always loved music of Shostakovich, even if by then I didn't even knew some of his rare symphonies, which are also great, by the way. So it's always coming from mainly from my mind, but then you obviously should have a collaboration with orchestra because, you know, if you say that, for instance, you want to record a Mahler cycle right now, but someone else just recorded it with orchestra maybe 5 years ago, it might not be a great idea. So you should still collaborate with the musicians, and ultimately it's they sounding. I'm not sounding on recording, and usually you don't see me even just on the picture. So for that, it's always this collaboration. What recordings in general for me, there's two main aspects. First of all, it's probably the best advertisement for the orchestra, for any orchestra, that people somewhere far away from where the orchestra based can buy a recording, can listen to it and find that this is great and wants to bring this orchestra to their country, for instance. And it did happen in my experience several times already. Secondary, for a conductor, it's kind of milestones, because imagine, you know, in 30, 40, 50 years, very few people will remember some of the concerts, if any. With recordings, it's something that stays longer. It doesn't mean that those recordings people will listen over and over and over again. Maybe, but who knows. But at least it's something that's left after you as a conductor. Because, no, we're not composers. Composers are immortal as they left the music, which will be performed. As a conductor, it's a momentary art. It's a present art. In the past, it's very little we can give to the people. And I think it's very important to leave something for the audience and for the public for generations after.
Yeah, so it's a legacy for your work beyond the memories that will be in people's minds after coming to concerts. Well, Vasily, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. It's been a pleasure chatting. Wishing you all the best for your concerts. Hope they all go ahead as planned, and look forward to your new interview series, Open Up. So best of luck with that.
Thank you very much, and hope to see you in London or somewhere else on the concerts. Thank you, Michael.
That was conductor Vasily Petrenko on musical life after lockdown, conducting and recording. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast from the team at BBC Music Magazine. Do let us know what you think by rating and reviewing it wherever you've been listening. If you want to find out more about BBC Music Magazine, we're available in print and various digital formats across the world. Or you can visit our website, classical-music.com, where you can read about all the latest music happenings, read thousands of reviews and a good deal more. Thank you to Acast for hosting this podcast and to our producer, Jack Bateman.